This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
Welcome to the Statman and Robin podcast. This is the Statman, and we thank you for joining us for part two of our show, Orioles Magical Weekends.
I want to talk about another series I've always been fascinated about, and I didn't remember a ton of the details because only one of the games was televised. You know, back in the day, games weren't on TV that much. 1980, going back 2 years, again, the Orioles Magic era. They didn't call it Orioles Magic for nothing. Now, again, right. This one still had it's kind of a melancholy finish. But I'm talking about the mid-August series when the Yankees came into Baltimore. And that was the year that the Orioles chased them, had another bad start, not quite as bad as 82. We hoped that they had gotten rid of that in 79 when they got off to a mediocre start and then jumped out and led the Eastern Division most of the year and wound up winning the pennant. They never really got buried this year, though, and then they got red hot. And let me pull that up. And August, they went 21-8.
Wow.
And they were 21-9 in September. Unfortunately, the Yankees were just about as good.
Yep.
And the Orioles would win, Yankees would win. The Orioles would lose, Yankees would lose. And it was, But when it came into mid-August, and the Orioles had swept a series in New York the week before, a three-game series. And that series drew over 150,000 people at Yankee Stadium. No sellouts, but still pretty good crowds for a midweek series.
Mm-hmm.
And the Orioles had won those games. Let me make sure I got the exact scores here. They had won them 5-2, 4-2, and 6-5. So unlike the Milwaukee series 2 years later, they did not have the heavy lumber out for that, but they had good pitching. Palmer won the first game, and Steve Stone, that was his magical year.
Boy, was it
25 wins.
Yep. Cy Young.
Yep. And then, what, three shutout innings in the All-Star game? Everything he touched. If they could have pitched him every day, they would have been great.
But, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, in that 1980 All-Star game, Steve Stone pitched three scoreless, and it was three up, three down every inning.
Yeah, I think you're right. Three perfect innings. Yes. Yep. And then Tim Stoddard won the third game in New York in relief. So they beat, among others, Ron Guidry and Tommy John. Yes, Tommy John of the Tommy John surgery. That is actually an actual person. For you youngins that just know about him as a ligament in an elbow, he was actually a human being and a pretty good pitcher for a long, long time.
Long time.
So the Orioles come back for the rematch in Baltimore. And again, this is impacted by a rainout. It was a four-game series scheduled Thursday through Monday, and there had been a rainout in April in Baltimore, so they tacked it on for a Monday a late afternoon game. It's a 5 o'clock first pitch.
And, on Monday.
On Monday. So a five-game series. And that series wound up setting records for attendance that, you know, given the shrinkage – steady shrinkage of Camden Yards are not likely to ever be broken, although I'm sure they'd love to get another five-game series against the Yankees in there. But anyway, this was really a huge, huge deal. Sports Illustrated covered it. They had it on their cover. And the series was later on referred to by a Baltimore Sun columnist, Alan Goldstein, as the incredible Take No Prisoners five-day war waged by the Orioles and the Yankees. There was a certainly a disappointment because after the final game of that series, which was August the 19th, I believe. Bear with me for a second. August the 18th, the Orioles and the Yankees didn't play each other again.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was unfortunate. I mean, you know, that's going to work out with some teams in your division. But, you know, so the climax of the season actually was in the middle of August. So the first game was Thursday night. And let's see, we had a crowd of 49,952, the smallest crowd of the series. They were 48 people away from having five straight 50,000 crowds.
Wow.
Of course, the capacity at Oriole Park's, what, 42,000 maybe? So,
yeah.
They got off to a good start because Steve Stone was pitching. And he may have pitched his best game of the year. He pitched a complete game, two-hitter. The only damage that was done is Reggie Jackson got a home run off of him.
Okay.
And that was in the second inning. The Orioles had already gone out to a 2-0 lead. And then it was 2-1. Stone wasn't the sharpest on his control. He had five walks, but he never bunched them together. They never really got him in big trouble. And the Orioles kept chipping away. They got two in the first, two in the sixth, and two in the seventh. And there were two-run homers by, a two-run homer by Gary Renicky. Remember him, part of that great platoon in left field. And then
he had his best year ever that year, if I recall, 1980.
I think you're right. And Rich Dower and Ken Singleton. And I think that might have been Singleton's best year, too, in 1980.
He had a really good 79, he was had a great year because I know he ended up number two in the MVP that year.
You're probably
might have
right.
Been a little better in 79.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he hit more homers in 79, too. He had better power.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Rich Dower hit the first of his two home runs that year in that game with the score 4-1 starting to pile on insurance runs. And it was a quiet night for the Yankees. The Orioles had come in. They had dropped a game back. They had gone within 2.5 with the sweep in New York. They lost 2 out of 3 in Kansas City. And remember, Kansas City won the American League pennant that year, so that was no slouch. And then coming back in, winning that game, they were back within 2.5 and still four cracks at these guys.
Right.
And winning 3 out of 4 would have got them down to a half game. Now, that didn't quite happen. But then Friday night, you had a really probably the toughest loss of the series is the Yankees. The matchup was Tommy John against Mike Flanagan, and Flanagan did not have a good start. It was eerily similar to that the pitching situation in that Saturday game of the Milwaukee series you just talked about, Rob, where McGregor got the quick hook. Well, Flanagan only went 4 1/3 and given up 7 hits and 4 runs. And who comes in? Sammy Stewart.
Yep.
4 2/3, no hits.
Wow. Yeah, just
3 Ks.
A real unsung hero for that Orioles team, late 70s, early 80s.
Yes, he was. But this time, unfortunately for the Orioles, they could not take advantage of that. They got 2 runs in the seventh to make it 4-3. But then they had to deal with Goose Gossage. Because John got through the sixth. And then he got in trouble, and his reliever, Bird, I forget his first name, came in, and they had to pull him. And Gossage went 2 1/3. Another example of how baseball was different there, because he was the closer. And that was one of his best years. was 1980, even though he gave up the big home run in the American League Championship Series to George Brett, which I think still hasn't come down.
Right.
But he went 2 1/3 with 5 strikeouts. And in the 8th and 9th, Orioles down a run, he struck out 5 of the 6 hitters.
5 out of 6. Wow.
Yeah, and the only other one got a ground out. So he went through the meat of the order and, dare I say, carved them up. So some very, very good clutch pitching from him. And an off night for Flanagan, who was coming off his Cy Young year. He was going to pass the mantle to Stone after that. But a crowd of 50,434 were mostly disappointed. Now, back then, the Orioles-Yankees was a big freaking deal.
Yep.
That was a nasty rivalry. And that the intensity of that season really put gasoline on the fire. But I don't think a whole lot of Yankee fans were able to make their way into Memorial Stadium that weekend. They had a bad habit of infiltrating for those games. But I don't remember there being a whole lot of presence, because I don't remember there being a whole lot of fights.
That was usually a good indicator. That's true. That's true.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because I remember you telling me later on in the 80s, the deal was, if you take a date to a Yankees game, don't sit out in the bleachers. That's where most of the fights are.
That usually was the case. Yeah. Yeah.
You get good enough tickets. The Yankee fans generally don't get those. They're picking up the bleacher seats and
whatever you can get. Yeah.
Yeah. So but you could usually see people converging. Oh, there we go. You know, this was too serious for that.
Right. Right. Well, not that alcohol could ever be involved in those situations.
No. No. They don't like to sell beer at games, do they? Geez. So that was a huge win for the Yankees, because they did what Milwaukee couldn't do. Is they stemmed the tide after a potentially momentum starting game in that first game of that series. But it also kept the tone that those were 5 hard fought games. So it was very much different from the Milwaukee series in that respect. And, you know, the no holds barred mentality was kind of there. The picture of Sports Illustrated was, I think it was Al Bumbry taking out the second baseman. For the second baseman or shortstop, he's taking out somebody at second, and that was a really good picture of that. Fortunately, there weren't any fisticuffs during the games, but it was incredibly intense. So now we go to Saturday afternoon. NBC did not put this on their Saturday game of the week. I checked that. They had 2 other games as the alternates. The Orioles and the Yankees were not one of them.
Wow.
Anyway, not that we wouldn't have seen it, so not that it really mattered, but I'm just saying. So so Saturday night, 51,649 show up, one of the records that was set, the largest night game, single game attendance. And I'll go through those after I finish going through the games here. And the pitching matchup was Dennis Martinez against Gaylord Perry.
I had forgotten that he pitched for the Yankees.
So had I. They had just picked him up earlier that week for this series.
Really? Just for that series.
Just for that series. And that was back in the day when those waiver trades, remember, after the trading deadline?
Yeah.
As Perry was near the end, and he pitched kind of so-so when he was with the Yankees. He only had a 4-4 record the rest of the year. But that was probably his best game. He pitched 7 innings and only gave up a run on 5 hits. And then Gossage came in the next game after 2 1/3 and went 2 innings and 6 up, 6 down.
Wow.
Yeah, so 4 1/3 innings, he had not allowed a base runner.
Right.
Again, he
and
was
pitching all those innings back-to-back.
Yeah. You know, the first thing a manager would say today is, well, first of all, he's not going to pitch his closer 2 innings,
right,
unless it's a World Series. Right. Secondly, he's not going to pitch him the next night after 2 innings. And he's certainly not going to pitch him 2 innings the night after 2 1/3 innings.
Sure.
But now Gossage had come up as a starter. You know, it wasn't as big a deal to get, what do they call them, lengthened out, stretched out, stretched out. Yeah. You know.
Yep.
So the Orioles did not find an answer for him. And the Yankees did have answers for Dennis Martinez, again, another starter going through with four runs. Dennis gave up 7 hits and 6 walks. Yes, not good. Oscar Gamble and Eric Soderholm, two big names, hit home runs off of him. Gamble's was a two-run shot, and that was all they needed. Yankees only got 7 hits. Orioles only got 5. So now they're back to 3.5. They're back to 4.5 down.
Right.
And it's like,
yep, you got to win the next two. Got to.
Yeah. Right. And if the Yankees have won the next two, they're up 6.5.
Right.
You know, there's still a month and a half left in the season, but, you know. Sunday was basically a must win. And it was the Sunday afternoon game. 50,073 showed up for that. ABC TV carried it, but blacked out in the home market. It was on Channel 7 in Washington. I don't remember that, but.
Wow.
So I don't know if you remember watching that or not. That was the only game that had any television coverage out of those 5, which for the youngins listening to this, I know it's got to be hard to believe. But when they said game of the week, they meant it.
That's absolutely. One game. Right.
Yes.
Right.
There was no such thing as cable coverage back then. In fact, most people don't know such thing as cable.
Right. Right.
As I was looking back at this, they asked Channel 2, who was the local carrier of the Orioles games. They said they had had an agreement with the Orioles that they would never carry a Yankees or Red Sox weekend game.
Really?
Yep. So, okay. And they just said they couldn't put it together that quickly, even if they got permission. Maybe they could have carried the Monday game.
Right. I see.
I mean, it kind of makes sense because, you know, the Orioles and, excuse me, the Red Sox and Yankees coming in were not automatic sellouts at that point.
Right.
But they were going to get good crowds, and they didn't want to dampen the crowds.
Right.
Of course, this, you know, they could have put all 5 of those games on TV, and they probably still would have drawn as many as they drew.
Yeah. Yeah, most likely. I think they would have.
this was the tightest, tensest game, and I think, you know, I've talked about intensity of this series. It was also really just tense. And this was the tensest of them all. Scotty McGregor and Luis Tiant at the back end of his career. The Yankees had picked him up after the Red Sox let him go. And
between Tiant and Gaylord Perry and Tommy John.
And Tommy John. Yeah.
How many innings between those three guys?
Jeez, a million. It also showed you they weren't exactly developing starting pitching in the farm system at that point. You know,
absolutely, absolutely.
They had to go out and get Gaylord Perry for the pennant race.
Right.
He was about 75 years old at the time, I think. and John was probably pushing 40 because he started in the mid-60s.
Yeah.
Anyway. But Tiant showed some of the old magic. You know, we saw him pitch a lot of great games against the Orioles for the Red Sox. He went 7 2/3 and only gave up a run. And that run was driven in by Terry Crowley, the King of Swing. I love that nickname. He didn't quite live up to that, but he did have some big hits over the years.
He did.
And, he got the game, what turned into the game-winning hit in the 6th inning because Scotty pitched a 9-inning typical Scott McGregor game. I don't have the pitch count on that. I'll bet you it was under 100. He gave up 6 hits and a walk, and that was it. 1 extra base hit. That was Scott McGregor at his best.
Yeah. If I recall, that was his 120-win season in his career, 1980. Pretty sure about it.
I think you're probably right. Let me just look that up real quickly. 1980, you are correct. He was 20-8.
Yep.
And he finished strong. He was 14-6. That win put him up to 14-6. So, you know, he was money. He was usually a great big game pitcher. Now, he didn't always get runs.
Right.
And, you know, the games he lost in the 79 World Series and the 83 World Series, he pitched really well.
He sure did.
but no runs. And no runs here, but he pitched well enough to make one run hold up. And I'm surprised the game was 2 hours and 26 minutes. He's known for throwing two-hour games. So Teon must have messed around.
Well, Teon's wind-up alone will extend the length of any game.
They'll tackle on 5 minutes for the game anyway, yeah. So the Orioles at that point had a split, and it was 2-2 and back within 3.5 games. And now you had the 5 o'clock Monday afternoon game.
Right.
And Mayor Schaefer had said city employees would be granted time off to go to the game. Yeah. And he encouraged other employers to do the same. And it worked out pretty well because they had, let's see, what was the crowd? 51,528. I don't know how many of them were city employees. I bet you there were a few.
Wow. On a Monday at 5 o'clock.
Yes. So,
and as any lifelong Marylander will tell you, August, it seems like sometimes half the population is at the beach in like the Ocean City, Maryland area, Delaware beaches, you know, just a couple of hours away. That's August in Baltimore.
Yep, that's right. Well, they rescheduled the beach trips that weekend. I'll tell you what. Now, this game got kind of crazy. The Yankees jumped out to a 2-0 lead off of Palmer. It was Palmer versus Guidry. Now, Palmer was having a good, not great year, and you could say the same for Guidry. And neither one of them had a good game. Palmer gave up 5 runs in 7 innings, and Guidry gave up 3 but 5 walks in 3 2/3. And they put in Rudy May. I didn't realize he was still pitching. And then Tom Davis came in out of the bullpen and pitched 3 innings of shutout. But after the 2-0, the Orioles went to town. And again, with no home runs, got 3 in the 4th and 3 in the 5th. And you had RBIs from Bunbury, Dower, and Mark Belanger.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He went 2 for 3 in that game, got 2 big RBIs there. So that put the Orioles out to a 6-2 lead, but then the 8th inning got kind of nervous, and that's when they yanked Palmer, and Tippy had to come in, Tippy Martinez, and get the last 2 outs. And Tim Stoddard, Palmer left with a runner at 3rd and 1 out.
Okay.
And Tippy got the last 2 outs, and then Stoddard gave up 2 singles, and runners at 1st and 3rd, 2 out, tying run at 3rd, 2nd inning in a row, and he got out of it.
Yeah. Stoddard had a big year as a closer that year.
Yep.
He had,
so
I want to
say, he had really good years.
Stoddard had, I think, between 25 and 30 saves that year. That was his high point, pretty sure, in his career.
Let's see. He got number 18 in that game. Where's the saves category? He had 26.
Okay.
And that was definitely his high mark. 79 wasn't as big a year for him. Yeah, he had 26 saves and a 2.5 ERA. But again.
And who did Tim Stoddard play college basketball for?
The only player in history
right.
to win an NCAA basketball championship with NC State.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about that team in later, programs. Yeah, the 74.
We'll be talking about that team, yes.
Yes. And then won a World Series later in 83 with the Orioles.
Right, right.
He was the star of neither team, but he was an important contributor to both teams.
He was a big somebody. I would not want to face him on the mound. I think he was 6'7", 6'8".
Oh, he was a serious power forward. And
his nickname was Bigfoot. I don't know if that was a basketball name, but it definitely was his name with the Orioles.
Well, he was a big guy, that's for sure.
And that was back in the days of the Bigfoot sightings, too. You know, late
70s. There you go. So the Orioles wound up winning 3 out of 5 in that kind of seemed like World Series, because I've seen a lot of World Series that were not as intense or competitive as that 5-game
right.
series was. Let's face
right.
it. And they wound up 2.5 games out of 1st. Now, they did continue to win after that. They won the last two of the Yankee series, and then they tacked on six more and got within a half game and stayed within a half game for a couple of days, then lost a couple of California to fall two and a half back, got within a game and a half back, but that was as close as they could get. They could never catch them. And they tapered off a little bit. They did not play badly, you know, and in September, I think I may have mentioned, let's see, September. No, I mentioned that for the, yeah, they were 21-9 in September.
Right.
And they ended August a game and a half out, and they ended September 2.5 out. I mean,
right.
What are you going to do, you know? The Orioles wound up winning 100 games.
Yes. Yes.
Second best record in the major leagues.
In the majors. And no postseason play. So modern day fans, the way the setup is now, wasn't always like that.
No.
But like you said, Orioles win 100, season over.
And to wrap this up, I think we can bring both of those weekends together, because if you look up in the history of Orioles attendance, you see these two series littered all over that. The record for a night game, 51,649 for the Saturday night game of that Yankees 1980 series. Night doubleheader, the doubleheader we were at in 82, 51,883. And see, I thought 5 day series. Well, okay. How many of them are there?
Exactly.
But still, 249,605.
Wow.
That is pretty amazing. And that doesn't add up to the official single game attendance, because there was only one crowd under 50, but that's what they have in the media guide. It's 249,605.
Right.
But I added up about 252.
Okay.
I used to be an accountant, so I can add.
You are the stat man. You're proving it once again.
There you go. And a 3-date series was the record, the Brewer series, 150,757. So that averaged a little over 50,000.
Wow.
So that's why we, you know, part of the reason why we made a big deal out of these two series is they were a big deal, because people packed that stadium. And they were, again, neither season had the happy ending.
Right.
You know, there can, both years turned out to be good years, and they were definitely worth remembering.
Yeah, and both seasons were among that cluster of seasons leading up to the 83 World Championship, where the Orioles were almost there in 79. 1980, 100 games, 81, you have the split season, the strike year. The Orioles were one of the best teams that year.
Right.
But in the format in 81, they didn't qualify for the postseason. Right. 82, we talked about that at the beginning of the podcast, finishing one game out. And 83, they put it all together.
That's right. And they were just kept knocking on the door.
Right.
And, you know, in 81, they had a great pennant race going with the Yankees in the first half of that season.
Yep.
And then it just never, nothing ever gelled in the second half. So, which is kind of, you could say that about the whole season, really, in baseball. Well, I know we've gone a bit longer than we did in other episodes, but I hope you find that the topics were worth it. And I hope you sense the excitement that Robin and I both had being a part of those series, rooting passionately for them. In 1980, I was listening to my radio in suburban DC, trying to get a good signal at night. It was worth it. You got any last thoughts you want to add, Rob?
Yeah, we went into a lot of detail about these two series, but again, two of the most meaningful historical series the Orioles ever played in the history of Memorial Stadium.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there haven't been a whole lot in the history of Camden Yards yet. Let's hope there are some down the road. But anyway,
we're still waiting, folks.
Hey, come on. So, Okay, well, I think that will wrap us up here. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Statman and Robin podcast. If you have any questions, ideas, or feedback, we've shared any memories that really meant something to you, please let us know. You can email us at statmanandrobin@gmail.com. And remember, it's good to look back as long as you live forward. Thanks for joining us.
See ya.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history. But as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with podcast network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.